Another source is synthetic data. This is a new one to me, but it really points to how powerful AI can be. So synthetic data generation means that you use one generative AI tool to create synthetic data, and then you use that data, that synthetic data, to train another generative AI tool.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast. I'm your host, Erin Austin, lawyer, mama of kid and doggy, tennis player, once and future trail runner, YouTube addict, and dreamer. I provide legal tips and bits for turning your expertise into recurring revenue, turning your time-intensive hourly-based business to one that is scalable and hopefully one day saleable is the journey from hourly to exit. This podcast is for experts, consultants, coaches, and other professional services providers with sophisticated corporate clients. If you're investing in the growth of your business, you need advice and resources that address the issues that set you apart from other service-based businesses. Those templates for online businesses don't mean a thing when your client sends their 50-page master services agreement to you for signature. Stop playing small because you don't know how to protect your ideas. Hourly to Exit is here to show you how to navigate the maze of contracts and intellectual property issues so that you can safely and profitably share your ideas with clients and with collaborators. Before we dive in, please remember that this podcast provides general information only. The content of this podcast should not be taken as legal advice for any individual case or situation. The information presented is not intended to be a substitute for professional legal consultation. Each legal situation is unique, and the laws and regulations can vary widely by location, and they do change over time. For specific legal advice regarding your individual circumstances, please consult with a qualified attorney who can address your specific needs. Now, let's get started with today's topic.
Today, we're talking about AI again, but more specifically about the training data sets for generative AI. Where it comes from, what some of the legal issues are, what is it? When we think about ChatGPT and other AI tools, I know I talk about ChatGPT all the time because that's frankly the one that I use and so the one I'm most familiar with, but this applies to all generative AI platforms. You hear about the vast amounts of data that they utilize. And as you can imagine, training data plays a crucial role in the development and the effectiveness of generative AI platforms. But where does all of that data come from? And I know you have lots of questions about that because you're worried about that is coming from your website. So let's start with what is training data? Training data is the backbone of any machine learning project, which is what generative AI is. It consists of large sets of information that's used to teach an algorithm how to recognize patterns and make predictions. That's how it is creative, i.e. generative. And so you put in this vast amount of data and it's labeled in certain ways. I don't know how it does this, but it learns the patterns and then it can make informed predictions and create new content based on that. So given the scale of modern AI requirements, the data sets are absolutely enormous, often encompassing billions of parameters. And that, of course, will change depending on the size and complexity of the model that is being trained. So the primary sources of training data, or I should say traditionally, the sources of training data for platforms like OpenAI was scraped from the internet for free. And that was used to train the first generative AI models like ChatGPT. And they've done a pretty good job, I'd say, of learning to mimic human creativity. Of course, I believe, and I think they're still sticking to this story, that it was legal and ethical for them to do so, relying on some prior cases that you can use publicly available information, so long as it's transformative, essentially making a fair use argument. I'm not going to go into the fair use argument, but that is the basis of why they thought they could do this. As you probably know, there have been a number of high profile lawsuits about their use. So we will see, and they have not been resolved yet. And so we will see if their reasoning and their defenses hold up. So to discuss a few of the ways that they do get training data, web scraping, which you've already talked about. So there would be crawlers they send out, scours the internet. It should only be scouring for things that are publicly available, that are not behind a paywall. However, well, there, you can ask a crawler, I'm assuming, to go behind the paywall, which obviously would be a breach of the terms and conditions of a site if you go around their paywall. And also, even if there is no paywall, many sites will have terms and conditions would say you're not allowed to use crawlers. If you don't comply with those terms and conditions, then you're also obviously breaching those terms and conditions of that. As well as when they're scraping that data off, many times, if not always, because like we can't really quite see what's in the black box of that training data, they're taking off any copyright notices. And it is a violation of the Copyright Act to take off copyright notices. So there's a number of issues involved with web scraping that obviously is falling in disfavor. So what is replacing that? Licensed data sets, very large data sets that are licensed from entities that own large amounts of data. I read this regarding this new path forward. There is a rush right now to go for copyright holders that have private collections of stuff that is not available to be scraped. So this is from a lawyer who is advising content owners on deals worth tens of millions of dollars apiece to license archives of photos, movies, and books for AI training. Reuters spoke to more than 30 people with knowledge of AI data deals, including current and former executives of companies involved, the lawyers and consultants, to provide the first in-depth exploration of this fledgling market, detailing the types of content that's being bought, the prices that they're getting, and any emerging concerns that come from harvesting this type of data, even if it's licensed, because of the personal data risks that go along with harvesting large amounts of data where the personal data of the human that it belongs to is done without the knowledge or consent of that person. Who are these huge licensees? There's a number of them. We have tech companies who have been quietly buying content that is behind locked paywalls and behind login screens from companies like Instacart, Meta, Microsoft, X, and Zoom. And so this might be some long forgotten chat logs or long forgotten photos from old apps that are being licensed. Tumblr's parent company, Automattic, said last month, and I'm recording this in April 2024, right? It was sharing content with select AI companies. And in February, that'd be 2024, Reuters reported Reddit struck a deal with Google to make its content available for training the latter's AI models. Of course, there's going to be some customer blowback. While this type of licensed content is accelerating, there will probably be some amendments still to it because, yes, Meta goes in and it changes its terms of use, but does anybody read the terms of use of Meta or of X or of Zoom even? So them going in, changing their terms and conditions without anyone kind of, without it saying in bright red letters, hey, we're going to be selling your data now to AI training, what comes from that? All right, then there are archives that are owned, such as the Associated Press and Getty Images, or I should say Getty Images is more of an aggregator. They don't own all those images. And so you can go to them and license their entire archives. And that provides a great amount of data for your data sets. Universities and research institutions are also owners or controllers of vast amounts of data that can be licensed all in one fell swoop. And then there are some nonprofit organizations that want to encourage the use of AI, just as we've had other types of nonprofits in the past, such as Creative Commons, who want to help people get more access to copyrightable materials. Now there are some who feel the same way about making AI data more accessible. For instance, this nonprofit, Allen Institute for AI, released a data set of 3 million tokens from a diverse mix of web content, academic publications, code books, and encyclopedic materials. Now, another source is synthetic data. Well, this is a new one to me, but it really points to how powerful AI can be. So synthetic data generation means that you use one generative AI tool to create synthetic data, and then you use that data, that synthetic data, to train another generative AI tool. So let's say you're developing a customer service AI model. You could use another generative AI tool to create fictional customers and situations and interactions. And then you can use those fictional customer situations and interactions as the training data for your public-facing AI model. So that way you're not at risk of exposing private customer information if you were to directly put your customer information into your AI tool. First, you kind of anonymize it using one generative AI tool, and it's not just enough to de-identify it, because there could be customer situations that are so specific that you could only point to one person, which is possible. So you also have to make up perhaps new situations, new backgrounds, things like that. But then you can use that as your fictional customer for your AI-governed customer service model to then use that to train to help provide customer service on an AI basis. So we'll see this with hospitals and banks as well that have sensitive information. Obviously, they cannot use their customers' sensitive information as training data, but they do want to have access to what is really kind of part of doing business these days, of having some sort of AI-based training systems. And then, of course, not last and not least, is the data that comes from you and me. So what does that mean? When we are using AI-generated AI platforms, when we input our prompts, if we put in something that we've written and ask it to create a summary of it, if we put in a transcript from something and ask it to create a show notes, like everything that we put into that has the potential to become training data for that platform. And so if we are doing that, we need to be aware of the terms of use of that platform. Most of them will tell you that it can be part of the training data, and it might also end up being an output for someone who puts in a query, a prompt that what you put in is a perfect answer for. You just don't know. And so we need to be careful about what we are putting in as prompts or as the input for whatever the AI platform that you're using. Make sure you are aware of their terms and conditions. Do not use any confidential information in there, whether it's yours or your clients. So make sure that you're really aware of that. Some AI platforms, I'm thinking in particular of DocuSign, they do use AI. And obviously when you're using DocuSign, there are legal agreements that are going in there that have identifiable information of the parties, commercial terms and things like that are in there. And so DocuSign said that they strip out any identifying data from that so that they do use the agreements for training data, but that they do strip out identifying information from it. So things to be aware of. In summary, the legal issues I think we've covered, but just to sum them up, there are the copyright issues of putting data into the database. I believe it was last week I talked about the copyrightability issues of the output. So now I'm talking about the copyright issues with the input, whether or not the AI platform or you have the right to add information to the training data set, whether or not that is a copyright infringement. Is that fair use of that data? One of the issues on the copyright side is sometimes the output will literally be an exact replica of what went in. And it's hard to make a fair use argument when a verbatim paragraphs in the case of the New York Times, which is the basis of their lawsuit against OpenAI, verbatim paragraph comes out as the output. Where's the fair use there? Same with Getty Images. They've had exact replicas of their images come out of an AI platform. So that's obviously an issue. In addition to copyright issues, we have privacy concerns. Maybe real images of people, well, there are instances of real images of people coming out. Most certainly, private photos that are from somebody's old Facebook or old blog posts, old journals. Think about what original blogs were kind of like journals, right? And people would use them as a journal, and they're probably hanging around somewhere. I'm thinking about a blog, I guess it was, at the time that I was started. I mean, it didn't last very long and no one ever saw it, but it's still somewhere. Like, I don't know if I could find it today, but it's still out there and somebody's web crawler could find it. I don't think they'd be very interested, but it's there. And so we do have the privacy concerns. And then we have the contract breach of if we are using, say, a client's confidential information, we're entering it into a AI chatbot, and it's the potential to be shared, we are breaching our contractual obligations to our clients if we're doing that without permission. Even if it is silent with the specifics of whether or not you can use AI, and some contracts are being explicit about it, but even if it's silent and you are obligated to use the client's information, keep it confidential, and only share it under very specific circumstances, putting it into an AI platform is probably not one of those permitted uses. So you do have issues there as well. All right, so that is what I wanted to cover today regarding AI training data. As you know, this is a fast-moving matter. You know, who knows what will come next week? I'll try to keep you up to date, but always feel free to connect with me and let me know what your questions are. I'm always happy to answer them. Thanks again, and don't forget, IP is fuel.
This week's episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast is sponsored by the NDA Navigator. Non-disclosure agreements, also known as NDAs, are the bedrock of protecting your ideas and your business's confidential information. Of course, I recommend that you have a lawyer review any agreement before you sign it. However, facing a constant stream of NDAs can be overwhelming, especially when time and budget constraints prevent you from seeking full legal review. That's where the NDA Navigator comes in. Designed specifically for entrepreneurs, consultants, and business owners with corporate clients, the NDA Navigator is your guide to understanding, negotiating, and implementing NDAs. Empower yourself with legal insights and practical tools when you don't have the time or funds for a full legal review. Get 20% off by using the coupon code H2E at protectyourexpertise.com. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast. Don't forget to check out the show notes for the resources and organizations mentioned during the episode. If you find the podcast to be valuable, please subscribe so you get notified of new episodes every week. And I would be so grateful for a rating and review, and it helps get the word out. See you next week.